The Sunday Baroque podcast is made possible by WSHU and the Friends of Sunday Baroque. You can find out more about the Friends of Sunday Baroque and find out how to become one yourself by visiting our website, sundaybaroque.org, under the Contact tab. Michelle Makarsky is a violinist known for her broad repertory, from Baroque music to contemporary works to jazz. She regularly collaborates with a variety of other musicians and ensembles, and her 2013 CD is a collaboration with pianist Keith Jarrett on 6 sonatas by Johann Sebastian Bach. Michelle Makarsky, thank you so much for joining me.
You're very welcome. I'm glad to be here.
And congratulations on your terrific Bach recording.
Oh, I'm glad you like it. We certainly had fun.
I'll bet. I want to dial back to the beginning, though. First, I understand you grew up in quite a musical household, and I'm wondering, when did you know in your heart of hearts that music would be your life's work?
Well, to be very honest, I never quite thought about it that way. My father, who was a multi-instrumentalist band leader, elementary school string teacher, actually primarily a classically taught violinist, violist, put a violin in my hand when I was, I think it was 5 or maybe 6. And I don't really remember much else except that it was fun and I kept it up. Not to say that it wasn't hard work. You know, I heard people outside calling, Mickey, to come out and play. But it was compelling enough that I managed to resist that and practice.
Now, in addition to your father, I understand you've also had the opportunity to learn from some other legendary teachers and mentors, people like Pablo Casals and Nathan Milstein. Now, what were those experiences like?
Well, Pablo Casals was in the context of being at the Marlborough Festival, and so I didn't have personal lessons with him or anything like that, obviously, but he was conducting us in the Marlborough Festival Orchestra. We were observing his coaching and things like this, and it was an incredibly inspiring to be around him. In terms of Nathan Milstein, I worked with him in summers in Zurich at the classes that he would give there, and this was incredibly inspiring. I really don't know what to say except that almost watching him and listening to him play was even more instructive than what he had to say. He was somebody that you learned from, in my opinion, by watching. He was great at kind of shouting at the various students there in their native language and in one way or another, and wasn't incredibly articulate in terms of teaching techniques, but my goodness, if you watched him play and understood the gist of what he was saying, it was a remarkable learning experience.
Can you recall a specific technique or specific moment or instructive item that really kind of struck home with you, something that you really observed and that really was resonant with you?
Well, I observed something. Two things come to mind. In terms of observing him, I was struck by something that I also observed with one of my early teachers, Misha Mishakov, who was Toscanini's concertmaster in the NBC Symphony, and who many of us who grew up in the Detroit area studied with. I studied with him from about the ages of, I think it was 9 to 12 or something, and he was quite elderly. Well, quite elderly. He was retired, I think, from the Detroit Symphony concertmastership by that time. And, you know, all these great violinists were not tall men. They were short. They had no necks. And they had these very, very chubby little fingers. And I just remembered noticing that when he would play something very fast, it looked as though his fingers weren't moving at all. I mean, it looked as though his fingers weren't leaving the fingerboard. And I noticed this very same thing with Milstein. It was just fascinating to watch the left hand. It looked completely unmoving, like things were happening magically. You didn't see this overlifting of fingers and a lot of up and down motion. It was quite magical.
And you said there were two things. Was there something else?
Oh, well, the other thing that I recall very well about that particular class is that, and I'm sorry, this is a little, I'm not flattering myself by saying this. I mean, it sounds like I am, I suppose. But it was kind of shocking to me because I didn't feel this way. But he really, really liked the way I played chords in Bach. And this was solo Bach we're talking about. And kept embarrassing me by holding me up to other people there as you know, somebody that knew how to play chords in Bach. And I remember being completely puzzled by this because I didn't know what I was doing and he didn't tell me what I was doing. He just liked the way I did it.
Now, because you're mentioning Bach, and of course this new CD is an all Bach CD, I want to go off in that direction now because a lot of people say that Bach's music is either particularly challenging or particularly meaningful for them. And so I would like to know, what does Bach mean to you as a performer?
Oh, my goodness. What does it mean to me? It's almost, I would have to say it's kind of beyond meaning. It's, and I mean that in the best, most positive possible way. I would say that Bach is the composer who I feel is kind of most he's vernacular to the way that I express myself in playing in a certain way. It's not that I don't play also very edgy music and very romantic music, but somehow, you know, if I haven't played for a while or if something is particularly upsetting, for instance, I can tell you that after 9/11, when I was resident here in New York, I had been doing a lot of very contemporary music. I mean, just that at that particular time, I'd been working on some things. My response to 9/11 was that I had no desire to play dissonant music. And that was not a decision. That was that it just emerged. It just became clear. And all I felt all I found myself doing was playing Bach.
So there's sort of a spiritual aspect to it, maybe.
Oh, yes, very definitely.
Is it very different to play Bach's music with a modern instrument versus a period instrument? I know that you are not a period instrument player, but do you think in terms of hearing what historically informed performance performers do you think it varies?
You know, this is it's a big, I'm sure it's, as you can imagine, it's a big issue, or not issue, it's a big topic. I have absolute respect for people playing period instruments. And the reason that I don't do that is that I'm a very, I like to do things as simply as possible, and I like to have liked to do recitals where I'm going from Bach or sometimes earlier music or Tartini or something like this to very rather rough, brutal new music. And I don't want to have to schlep around two instruments, and I don't want to have to make a big fuss about going from one instrument to the next. So, and you can tell me if I'm not answering your question, please feel free to redirect me, because this is a big topic and it takes up a lot of space in my brain when someone asks this question. My job, I feel, is to play Bach in the way that it speaks to me. In my last couple of my last recordings, some people thought I was playing a Baroque instrument. I got that in certain reviews, which of course I'm not. I don't really know what to say. I just hear it a certain way, and I treat it that I figure out technically how I get what it is that I want to hear on the instrument I'm playing on, which is a modern instrument. Mm-hmm. So I guess, of course, in my, you know, I read Donnington and all these good things, and of course I've read Harnoncourt and all kinds of wonderful things about Baroque music, but that was a while ago, and so it's just kind of in there. I don't kind of check the rules, if you see what I mean. Mm-hmm. But I think I have a fairly good sensibility about what it is I want to hear, and I really try to make sure that I'm not violating anything while at the same time I'm not being academic.
Mm-hmm.
No, I think you've definitely answered my question, and I think you're definitely, that's a bullseye answer, because I hear that in this recording. I hear a real sensitivity for it, but maybe not an obsession with some of the little details. So yes, I think I agree with you.
And the other thing that I can add about this is that, keep in mind, if I had been doing this with a cembalo on a modern instrument, it would have been quite different. It would have been even more different. But I probably, you know, I mean, I'm playing with a modern piano. Mind you, this particular piano is very harp-like and very beautiful. But so I could be doing the same six sonatas with the same performer, with Keith, on the cembalo, and it would have been quite different. So I had to make certain, of course, adjustments in terms of producing sound in a certain way and all that sort of thing, due to the fact that we're playing with a modern piano.
Mm-hmm. And that's a perfect jumping off point for me to ask you about your collaboration with Keith Jarrett. How did that come about, and what was that like?
Well, it came about in an extremely serendipitous way. Keith and I had played in the mid-90s on a recording called Bridge of Light. Actually, it was the first recording I did for ECM, and that was his written down music. And we got along very, very well. We collaborated very easily. Then a number of years went by, and we were not in touch at all. And I don't think he was doing, there was a while he wasn't doing much playing because he wasn't feeling well. Then, if my recollection serves me correctly, when he gave his first Carnegie solo concert that after he hadn't been playing for quite some time, I went to the concert and saw him afterwards. And so we kind of renewed our friendship in a kind of passing way. Then again, I would go to concerts, and some years went by again. And then he got in touch with me in the fall of 2008. And hadn't realized that I was living here in New York, and I didn't know whether he was still in his home in rural New Jersey, but he was. So we started visiting. And then it turned out that the two of us did not have anything to do that particular Christmas. I'd seen my family at Thanksgiving. He was going to see his family at some other point. And so he asked me if I would like to come over and to celebrate by playing something. We had not played at all. I didn't even have the instrument with me when we were visiting before. We were just having fun and talking. So he said, "What should we play?" And I suddenly started thinking, "Oh dear, I'm not sure I should go over there and improvise." So I said, "How about some Bach?" Because I'd been looking at these, and I'd been thinking about saying to Manfred Eicher and ECM Records that I would like to record these. So I went over there, and as it turned out, we read through all of them, and Keith was absolutely thrilled. And to make a very long story short, over the next couple of months, we played them quite frequently together. And then we didn't, you know, I mean, we were both busy. We didn't see each other for months at a time. And then, you know, we'd both be back in town, we'd see each other again, and we'd play through them. And this went on for almost 2 years, or year and a half, 2 years, 2 years actually, because that was Christmas of 2008, and we recorded in November of 2010, right.
So now you've recorded six sonatas by Bach on this recording, and in general, I'm wondering whether there is any inherent advantage or disadvantage to presenting multiple works by the same composer altogether.
Well, I'd like to think that when one is presenting a set of anything, and this is a doable set, I mean, it's actually even doable in one long concert. It's about 90 minutes of music. When you're doing a set of things over a duration of time, whether it's in a concert and also in preparation or in recording, I think it's a little bit like an actor getting into a role. I think it allows you to really immerse yourself in the character of that particular composer and that particular time period. So, for instance, one of the things that I have done, as I said earlier, is to play very mixed recitals, unaccompanied recitals especially, and it's quite a challenge and quite a skill to be able to go from one period and one style to another, especially when you're playing a broad range of things, you really feel a bit jerked around. You have to jerk yourself around a bit. This is quite the opposite. It's quite a luxury in the sense that you can inhabit a particular kind of psychic space, if you see what I mean, and stay there. And, you know, of course, there are the differences between the movements. There are dance movements. There are very somber movements. You know, they're very quick movements and extremely slow movements. But at the same time, you're still in the same time period, and you're still in the same composer's, you're in his language and his world.
Mm-hmm. So in a sense, it really is an advantage then.
I think so. I felt it was.
Mm-hmm. Now, you've had music composed especially for you. I wonder what that's like. And do composers just sort of do their own thing, or do they consult with you? Do they compose with any special skill or technique of yours in mind?
I would say likely not. Two composers in particular come to mind, and neither one of them, unlike I would say a lot of other people, they did what they wanted to, and I played it. Now, that doesn't mean at the end, when they've mostly finished composing, or if they had a question about something, you know, does this work? Then we'd confer, and I'd say, okay, this works, meaning if they're trying to get a particularly high note or a harmonic in a certain way or a particular kind of technique. But I don't think they're writing, I don't believe anybody's written anything for me that involves a particular technique unique to me, with one possible exception. It just pops into mind. Stephen Hartke wrote a concerto, violin concerto for me, and at the end of the first movement, he put in repeated very high, I can't remember what it is even now, what the note is, but he told me that this was an homage to what we're quite good friends, an homage to what I call my happy noise, which is something that sounds a little bit like an oboe player clearing their reed. It's very high, and it's kind of a beep noise. And so that would be about the only specific thing that I think anyone's ever written for me with that kind of thing in mind. Donald Crockett, who wrote a piece for me, which is kind of a portrait, called Mickey Finn. Mickey is my nickname. He claims that piece, you know, I mean, he claims it's a bit of a portrait of me. So that was kind of fun to see, because it goes back and forth between, and that's on an earlier ECM recording. Actually, that's on my previous ECM recording with Tartini sonatas. This piece, Mickey Finn, goes back and forth between kind of Bach chorale-like broken chords, rolled chords, and very energetic rhythmic music. So I guess that says something about at least the way he perceives my character.
Hmm. Well, it sounds very much like your repertory all over. That's great. What about your next project? What can we expect from you next?
Well, that's a good question. Actually, I'm in the process of relocating, and so I'm toying with several things right now, but actually, you know, I've got a couple of ideas that I can't really talk about yet because I don't want to jinx myself. They're not fleshed out. And so I think we're just going to have to wait and see. I don't want to verbalize something that I may have to retract later.
Well, you've left us wanting more. I love that. Michelle Makarsky, thank you very much for this time and for your candor. And again, congratulations on this really wonderful new Bach recording. I'm really delighted to be able to share it with Sunday Baroque listeners.
Thank you so much for asking me, and I hope people will enjoy it.